Welcome to episode 86 of the Fredcast, cycling podcast for the week of December 16th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, we're back, and so is the news, including the second anniversary of the Fredcast. Pro cycling news, cities cracking down on scofflaw cyclists, a Sol Raisin update, the MIT cycling team setting a record for human-powered computing, product recalls, news of the weird, and more. Following the news, winter cross training, a new social networking site for cyclists, a new cycling computer with some unique functions, a review of El Tour de Tucson, upcoming events, and pod-safe cycling music with a holiday twist. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by listeners like you. Thanks so much for your donations, and thanks for clicking those links at www.thefredcast.com, because that too supports the show. Welcome back to the Fredcast, and yes, it has been a while, but I'm sitting here, you know, really with just the silliest grin on my face, because it's fun to be back behind this microphone again. I really forgot how much I enjoy doing this, whether it's the research before the show, communicating with you by email, or just sitting behind this microphone and letting you know what's going on in the world of cycling. I know I've said it before, but look, my apologies. Life does sometimes get in the way of podcasting, and I know that there are some of you out there who may not, well, you may not be out there anymore, because I got a few angry emails from people who said, you know what, I'm done with you, I'm done with the Fredcast. And you know what, that's just fine. This is an avocation. It is something that I enjoy doing. It's a bit of a hobby. It's a labor of love, and sometimes other things do get in the way, and whether that's an illness that hit me like a ton of bricks and lasted literally several weeks, or whether that's my real job, which obviously will take precedence over the podcast, or my family, which of course takes precedence over everything else. For those of you who have stuck with me, who have stayed subscribed, thank you very much. I will do my best not to let you down, but I have really appreciated your emails and your voicemails of support, letting me know that you're going to be there whenever I come back. Well, I'm back. And what's really cool about being back right now is the fact that, and it had to be pointed out to me by a listener, the fact that we just passed a milestone here at the Fredcast, and that is the second anniversary of the show. That's right. The Fredcast is now in its third year of bringing you cycling news and cycling information and product reviews and really providing what I hope is a community for cyclists. Toward that end, as always, if there's something you'd like to hear about in our third, fourth, fifth, 10th year of the Fredcast, don't be shy. Go ahead and contact me, whether it's by email or voicemail or whatever way you like. And of course, I talk about that at the end of the show. Please do feel free to contact me. I'm here for you as much as I can be, and I'm really pleased to be here creating this community. So don't hesitate to communicate with me so that the Fredcast becomes everything that you hope that it will be. Now, toward that end, there is one other announcement that I've got for you before we get to the news, and that is that this will be the first show that I will ever produce as an enhanced podcast. Now, maybe you're not familiar with an enhanced podcast, and I talked a little bit about this on the website. Simply speaking, if you've got an iPod, or perhaps if you listen to this show in iTunes, you may not be aware, but there is the ability to add chapters, much like in a DVD, where you can skip from scene to scene. Listen, I know that there are some of you out there who just aren't interested in the pro cycling news. Some of you out there who may not be interested in product recalls. I don't understand why, but it is possible. And this will allow you the opportunity to skip forward past something you're not interested in, or, as I often do with a lot of the podcasts that I listen to that are enhanced, allow me to skip back to re-listen to a story again. So how do you get this? Well, I'm going to be providing the enhanced podcast in the regular feed for tonight's show. But after this, I'm going to be providing a separate feed just for the enhanced podcast. We'll call it the eFredcast, for the enhanced Fredcast. And you will find the link for that feed on the Fredcast website shortly. In the meantime, you may be getting two copies of this show, one in our regular MP3 format, and that's the one that does not have the chapters, and a second one in a new format for us, and that's the AAC format. That's a special proprietary format that Apple has come up with that will work whether you're on a Mac or a PC, as long as you're using iTunes and or an iPod. So you can listen to one or the other. You can experiment, if you like, with the AAC. But starting with our next show, there will be two feeds, one with the regular MP3 and one with the AACs. Feel free to let me know what you think about this new format. It does take me a little bit longer to produce the show, but personally, I love enhanced podcasts myself. I find them extremely useful. I hope that you will too. One thing I'm not doing, at least right now, is I'm not going to be providing special graphics to go along with each chapter. That really would take a lot more time. And I think what's more important to you is the content, secondarily getting the chapters. And I think that from all of the feedback that I've gotten, a lot of you listen in the car, you listen on your bike, maybe you listen at the gym, you're not going to look down at the graphics anyway. If that becomes important to you, we'll look at doing it in the future. Right now, just the MP3 and the AAC, no special graphics. Hope you enjoy it. Let me know. Now, let's get to the news. And speaking of pro cycling news, there is a bunch of pro cycling news that we just have to get to. Starting off with something that's going on in the UCI. Now, you'll recall that we've talked numerous times, probably since about day one here on the Fredcast, about the ongoing battle between the organizers of the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, and the Vuelta a España, and the UCI, or the International Cycling Union. Well, as you well know, there has been a bit of a resolution of this whole situation, and part of that is that the Tour de France, for instance, will not be part of this year's Pro Tour, although you can certainly expect Pro Tour teams to participate. As a result, UCI President Pat McQuaid is looking for new venues for the UCI Pro Tour, and he's now talking to China and Russia about bringing Pro Tour stage races to those countries. Matter of fact, it looks like there will be races in those countries in 2009. Pat McQuaid told the Associated Press that, quote, China is interested in a major tour as a legacy for the Olympic Games. He also said that Russian President Vladimir Putin is behind Russia's bid to bring a stage race to Russia. McQuaid said that Vladimir Putin himself is actually behind the bid, and he would like to bring a cycling event to the Sochi area, which is not very well known, but it's a Black Sea resort, and apparently it's someplace that the Russians really would like to spotlight by doing this. McQuaid said, quote, "We will create a global tour. It's important for our sponsors to go into these new markets. Cycling needs to offer those markets." Speaking specifically about the Chinese race, he said, quote, "The Tour of China will be a professional tournament different from other races held in China. This means that the world's top 18 to 20 professional teams will participate in the event for the first time in China's cycling history. After the Olympic Games, we will cooperate with the Chinese Cycling Association and continue to inject new excitement for bicycle events in China. For this reason, we are very, very excited for our future tour of China. I believe that many bicycle fans in China know the Tour de France. We hope to make the Tour of China an event as important as and as popular as the Tour de France. The race would be part of the elite Pro Tour calendar. We are all looking forward to it." I think his comment about making it as important as the Tour de France is very telling. Remember what his goal is here. He has to find a way to replace the Tour in, and by that I mean the Tour de France, in the Pro Tour's calendar. Whether or not the Tour of China is going to be that, well, I think that while China is the place that everyone associates with the just a huge number of bicycles and bicyclists, I tend to doubt whether or not the Tour of China will reach the same stature in professional cycling as the Tour de France. Of course, we'll just have to wait and see. Now, of course, there is another new stage race that's going to be happening very, very soon. We talked about this during the Interbike coverage, and that is the inaugural tour of America. So I have to back up and just tell sort of a brief story. Last Friday night, I was on an airplane headed back home after a business trip. It was sort of late, and I'm sitting in an aisle seat, and there's a guy walking down the aisle, and I look down at his jacket, and on the jacket, there's a logo, and it says SOAR Communications. Now, if you're not familiar with SOAR Communications, they are one of the preeminent public relations firms in the outdoor sports industry, and they're very well known in the cycling industry because of the work that they do with a number of cycling companies, including the Tour of America and Interbike. And I know Chip Smith. I've met him at Interbike, and he's a name that I associate with SOAR. Well, to back up, this guy's walking down the aisle, and I look down at his logo. It says SOAR Communications, and I don't think I meant to say this out loud, but I said, "You're not Chip." And he looks at me and says, "No, I'm David." Well, it turns out David's the CEO of the company. Anyway, we chatted briefly, and it turned out that Chip Smith was farther toward the front of the airplane. I didn't get a chance really to speak with either of them. But what David did tell me was that they had just been in North Carolina that day, and that they had been meeting with the organizers of the Tour of America. That's Aku Inc. And then, lo and behold, I come home, and I check my Fredcast email, and there is a press release. So here's what the press release had to say and what David and Chip were working on as they were back there in North Carolina talking to the organizers of the Tour of America. Essentially, based on feedback that they've gotten from racers, professional racing organizing bodies, the media, and supporters like you and me, they've made some changes to the Tour of America. Specifically, they've shortened it up a little bit. Basically, the race is now 21 stages. It'll cover about 2,200 miles, and that's about 3,500 kilometers, and it will run from September 6th through the 28th, 2008. It's going to start in Central Park in New York City and finish in Palo Alto, California, up in Northern California, the home of Stanford University. These are some great changes, some things that I think were very necessary in order to ensure the success of the event. According to Aku's president, and I'm sorry, sir, but if I butcher your name, I apologize. I'm well known for doing that. His name is Frank Erokiasami. When he originally announced the details, the race was going to be over 4,000 miles with 27 stages. But now he said, quote, "During and after our announcement at Interbike, almost daily, I received emails and phone calls with positive and negative comments about the race. The overwhelming response showed that there was an interest and a need for a Tour de France-style race here in the United States. Based on the feedback from everyone, we realized our first plans were perhaps too ambitious and that the original race schedule didn't fit within standard racing protocols. To ensure the race would attract the best international racing teams and the support of both cycling enthusiasts and sports fans alike, we've modified the race schedule and route to its current form." In case you're wondering whether or not it's going to come through your city if you live here in the United States, cities that are along the race's route include, of course, New York City, Philadelphia, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, St. Louis, Denver, Las Vegas, Sacramento, Napa, Santa Rosa, and Palo Alto. Now, what's interesting, of course, if you're in the bike industry or you just follow these sorts of things, the Las Vegas event includes a time trial to be held the evening of September the 22nd, which is the first day of the outdoor demo at this year's Interbike. You know there's going to be a lot of bicycle industry people there, including myself. Well, let me back up. That's my dad's 70th birthday. I have a feeling I'm missing that one this year. Anyway, if you want more information about the Tour of America, I have put a link in the show notes, and just a quick shout out to both Chip and David from SOAR Communications. Nice flying with you, fellas. Well, if you followed our coverage of the Tour de France this year, you will recall that with all of the doping scandals that were going on, and by the way, don't worry, we're not about to plunge into a whole discussion of doping. Would I do that my first day back? Okay, I would, but I'm not doing it now. With all of the doping scandals, one of the things that we said, and you'll recall, we had a message from a professional cycling director who agreed with this. One of the things that we all agreed on was that a lot of these teams and professional cycling in general is going to have problems keeping sponsors. And one of the most well-known sponsors of professional cycling has been Deutsche Telekom, or T-Mobile? Well, a couple of weeks ago, and in case you missed this, I thought it was important that you know about it. A couple of weeks ago, T-Mobile decided that they are done, once and for all, with professional cycling. According to a spokesman for T-Mobile, quote, "We arrived at this decision to separate our brand from further exposure from doping in sport and cycling specifically. This was a difficult decision given our long history of support for professional cycling and the efforts of Bob Stapleton in managing the team in 2007. Now, a couple of things that are interesting here. One, notice that what the spokesman said was they want to separate their brand from, quote, further exposure from doping in sport and cycling specifically. Interesting, considering last week the Mitchell Report came out talking about doping in professional baseball. Finally, something I have been carping on here on the Fredcast. Meanwhile, he also mentioned Bob Stapleton. And the reason why he mentioned Bob Stapleton is because while T-Mobile is no longer the title sponsor or a sponsor at all of this team, the team will go on. The new name for the team is Team High Road. High Road Sports actually holds a Pro Tour team license, and they're asking the UCI to authorize them as part of the Pro Tour for this year. Bob Stapleton said, "We have an outstanding international roster of exciting young talent backed by proven veteran leadership for 2008. Well, who's he talking about in the proven leadership? Well, none other than veteran American rider from the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team, two-time U.S. champion, George Hincapie. Hincapie was quoted in Velo News as saying, quote, "It feels like I'm starting over. I'm excited about what's coming up this season. I needed a new start, and I believe with T-Mobile, it's a perfect team. I've seen other riders change teams and get stronger. I was set in my way somewhat at Discovery Channel. I'm looking forward to a new challenge." So good luck to George, good luck to Bob, and good luck to Team High Road. Also leaving professional cycling is disgraced Kazakh cyclist Alexander Vinokourov. He announced his retirement in the wake of the one-year doping ban that he received from the Kazakh Cycling Federation as a result of his results at the 2007 Tour de France. Remember, he tested positive for a banned blood transfusion, and then he was fired by his Astana team after his B sample confirmed the result. Said Vino, quote, "I don't want this sport anymore. I'm slamming the door and I'm leaving. I will prove I'm not guilty. I want to restore my honor and get the results of this test rescinded." Like Floyd Landis, like Tyler Hamilton, like so many other cyclists before him, Vinokourov has professed his innocence since day one. Remember, at the Tour de France, he said, "It's a mistake. I've never doped. That's not the way I see my profession." Nevertheless, Team Astana was disgraced at this year's Tour de France, and they have rebuilt with a lot of the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team's best cyclists, and they are looking to be a force to be reckoned with this year in 2008 without a lot of those famous riders like Andreas Klöden, Andrei Kazechkin, and yes, without Alexander Vinokourov. Meanwhile, in much better news for a professional cyclist, and one that I think that you Fredcast fans down under are going to be really pleased about, I'm happy to let you know that Stuart O'Grady is back on his bike and is back in racing form. In case you don't remember, O'Grady was involved in an accident at this year's Tour de France. He hit a post, he fractured his collarbone, a bunch of ribs, punctured a lung, and had to be taken out of the race on a stretcher. Nevertheless, this week, O'Grady is back on his bike on a track in Melbourne in professional racing once again and looking forward to everything from defending his Paris-Roubaix title to competing in the Tour de France and competing in the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing, China. According to O'Grady, quote, "Retiring, it never entered my mind. Part of the reason I heal so quickly is how I take things psychologically. The best way to recover is to pick an objective and will myself back on the bike." Then he said, "Maybe it was the morphine, but retiring never entered my mind. It was just another obstacle, another hurdle to overcome." So Stuart, this week, as you race once again as a pro on the track, I, for one, wish you a lot of luck and welcome back to pro cycling. You know, if you follow my Twitters, and that's my microblogging that I do at twitter.com. If you follow those, one of the things that you'll know is that earlier today when I was going over all of my news feeds in preparation for tonight's recording, I mentioned the fact that I am just really tired of week after week, day after day, seeing so many stories about cyclists being killed or seriously injured out there on the roads in confrontations with cars. Well, of course, a lot of times, we like to think that it's the motorists who are at fault and not the cyclists. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. How many times do you see a fellow cyclist running red lights or running stop signs? Well, I'm beginning to notice a new trend, and that is cities are deciding that they need to crack down on the cyclists as much as they need to crack down on the motorists. A couple of examples. First of all, an email I received recently from a friend of mine in Southern California. And I'm just going to read it to you verbatim. It says, "Hey, FYI, it's Sunday morning and a Redondo Beach police officer stopped in," this is at a store that my friend frequents, "to try to communicate a message through a different means rather than writing $250 tickets. His message was that the chief of the Redondo Beach PD has told all of his officers to start writing citations to all cyclists who blow stop signs and don't obey the rules of the road. He specifically said that they're targeting road bikes, primarily along the Esplanade." It's a very popular cycling route down there by the beach in Redondo Beach, California. "He asked me to communicate this to anyone that I know. They would rather not write the tickets, but they want the cyclists to be aware and be safe. Pass this along to everyone, and let's hope no one gets written up." See, now I'd amend that personally, and I'd say, let's hope that no one gets written up, and let's hope that no one is running the stop signs, and let's hope that nobody's running the red lights, and that nobody's getting hit by a car. There was a follow-up to the email that went around to the whole distribution group, simply a one-line example of exactly what I'm talking about. It says, "Get caught rolling a red light in Laguna Beach on a bike, and the fine is $395. Oh, and one more thing, it's a point on your DMV record because it is a moving violation. Meanwhile, here's this story from Bern, North Carolina, and it says, "Bern police say that they will ticket bicyclists who violate traffic laws. Police say they've noticed a number of bicycle riders who travel on the wrong side of the road." Hello. "There's not been a noticeable increase in bicyclists being hit by motorists, but police and the public are seeing more bike riders traveling the wrong direction. The practice poses an increased risk for fatal crashes and injuries, according to Beth Stevenson, New Bern police spokeswoman. North Carolina law requires bike riders to follow the same laws as drivers." And by the way, most states' laws say that. "Bicyclists are required to travel in the same direction and on the same side of the road as cars." Stevens had said police will be monitoring bicycle use, and those traveling on the wrong side of the road in a manner that disrupts traffic flow will be issued a citation. At night, a bicycle rider is required to have a headlamp, visible up to 300 feet, attached to the front of the bike. The bike must have a rear reflector or a red lamp that can be seen from at least 200 feet behind the bike, and riders under the age of 16 must wear a protective helmet if the bike is being used on a public roadway, public bike path, or public right of way. Now, I mention all of that stuff at the end because it's just common sense, folks. Follow the rules and you will be safer. That's not Pollyanna. That's just straight common sense. A different response to the same problem is going on down under in the Australian state of Victoria, where the police there have joined with a couple of cycling groups, Cyclesport Victoria, Triathlon Victoria, the Cycling Promotion Fund, and Cyclosportif Victoria. Together, they are launching a new code of conduct for cyclists. What you may recall, and I believe we talked about it here, there is a ride down in Victoria called the Hell Ride. And at this year's Hell Ride, a pedestrian was hit and killed by a cyclist. Shortly after the coroner's report came out, the police got together with these other interested parties to come up with the code of conduct. A According to the general manager of Cyclosport Victoria, Steve Peterson, quote, it is hoped that by instilling a sense of responsibility amongst the higher-end riders, they will set the standard for the greater majority of the cycling community. By the way, that's exactly what I'm hoping for all of you. I know that you're higher-end riders, and I know you know the right things to do out there. And if you do those right things, so will those middle-end and lower-end cyclists, and they will follow your example. And that is what we can all hope for. Now, I found an editorial on an Australian website that I thought was worth reading because it points out why these sorts of measures are necessary. Because listen to the anger in the tone of what the editorial writer had to say. He says, the death of pedestrian James Gold on Beach Road, Mentone last year was the catalyst for action to control renegade cyclists on the notorious Hell Ride. A code of conduct has now been launched to rein in cyclists. It suggests groups not exceed 20 cyclists, that they make no sudden direction changes, and should warn each other of hazards. The code comes with a warning of stiff penalties for those who break road laws. Former state coroner Graham Johnstone was highly critical of the Hell Ride when he investigated Mr. Gold's death. The 77-year-old was mown down by a Hell Ride cyclist who ran a red light. Mr. Johnstone said hundreds of cyclists speeding in packs was high risk and not suited to the roads they used. Those comments could have led to a ban, a move that would have been applauded by many drivers and pedestrians. The code of conduct gives the Hell Riders a clear set of rules, and it is up to them to prove they can use the roads responsibly. You noticed the loaded language. Things like renegade cyclists, rein in cyclists, mown down. There's some loaded language there. Now, obviously, one death is one death too many. There's no doubt about that. And I do feel for the family of Mr. Gould. And that is why I'm urging all of you, please, whether it's fear of getting a ticket and a point on your license, fear of a $395 fine, or fear that you may actually kill someone or yourself, it's time for all of us in 2008 to be safer cyclists. By the way, I have put a link in the show notes to the new code of conduct that the Victoria Police came up with. I think it's really good. Whether you live in Australia, the United States, or Outer Mongolia, take a look at it. There are some good suggestions and some good rules to live by. Well, now I've got an update on former professional cyclist Saul Raisin. I'm putting this in its own category because, in a way, Saul has been a friend of the show and somebody that we've been talking about, again, since the very beginning of the Fredcast. And I want to read you a blog post that I wrote several weeks ago because I think that it provides a little bit of closure to some of the things that we've been talking about here when it comes to Saul and the accident that he had and his pro cycling career. It says, I got an email today from my friend Dave Shields. Dave is the author of The Race, The Tour, and Tour de Life. That's the story of Saul Raisin's injury and his miraculous recovery. In the email, Dave relayed the news that Saul's career as a professional cyclist has now come to an end. As Dave said in his email, quote, unfortunately, his comeback was partially dependent on factors outside of his control. Each time a doctor, sponsor, or race organizer signed off on his participation, they also signed on to an enormous liability should he crash or cause a crash. Unfortunately, the time has come when the risks were too large for someone with a lot at stake. Now, of course, for more information and in Saul's words, you can check out Saul's blog. But I closed my blog post with, there's an old saying that goes, whenever one door closes, another one opens. Having met and spoken with Saul twice, having met his amazing parents, and knowing his story, I am 100% confident that Saul will be successful no matter what door he chooses to walk through next. Well, I can tell you that one of the next doors that Saul did walk through happened just a couple of days ago. Saul got married to Aliza Zabriskie. And yes, from that Zabriskie family. They were married in Hawaii. There are pictures on his website. They look like the happy bride and groom. And I wish them congratulations and a life full of love and success and health, and that all their dreams should come true. Now, one of the dreams that may have come true is the fact that USA Book News recently chose Saul and Dave's book, Tour to Life, as the best sports biography of 2007. If you haven't read it, I urge you to. It is an amazing story and one which touches everyone that I know who's read it, cyclists and non-cyclists alike. Oh, and by the way, if you have read The Race or The Tour, that's Dave Shields' fiction based on the Tour de France, you'll know that the main character is on a team, a fictional team, called Banque Fédérale. Banque Fédérale jerseys are now available if you're a fan of Dave's books, and I've put a link in the show notes. I plan to get one myself because I loved his books. You'll recall when we talked about our Interbike coverage, both in 2007 and in 2006, one of the highlights of that coverage, one of the highlights of the show, at least in my opinion, is the outdoor demo. That's 2 days to try out all of the new road bikes, mountain bikes, 29ers, you name it, they're there. And it is a blast and a great way to decide which bikes you're interested in for the coming year. Traditionally, the outdoor demo, like Interbike itself, is for the trade only. And traditionally, at least in the last several years, Interbike has been a West Coast only event. Although I remember a number of years ago doing Interbike in Atlantic City and also doing Interbike in Philadelphia. But those have gone away and neither of those ever had an outdoor demo. But now I got an email from one of you listeners telling me that you saw somewhere that there is a possibility that Interbike is considering an East Coast version of the outdoor demo. And that it looks like in 2008, they're considering the dates of October the 16th through the 18th, and that if they decide to go forward, this will probably take place, at least the proposed place, is Roger Williams Park near Providence, Rhode Island. And it looks like, here's the kicker, that there may be one consumer day where you too might be able to go out there and take a look at those bikes. I have put an email out to Rich Kelly at Interbike. Now, it is the holiday time, so it's possible that he's not working at the moment, but as soon as I get some confirmation from Rich Kelly, I will let you know, because this could be a great opportunity for you Freds out there to ride to your heart's content. I will keep you posted. So in preparation for tonight's show, one of the things that I was doing was I was just tightening up the website and going over some old stuff there, and I came across a comment from one of you that said something to the effect of, love the show, but I think you're a techno weenie. And all right, I accept the techno weenie moniker. I can handle that. Well, along the techno weenie side of the show, here's a story from a couple of days ago that indicates that cyclists at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology have set a new world record. No, this one isn't for speed. It's not for distance or endurance. No, this one is for human-powered computation. There was a team of 10 bicycles and bicyclists that were used to power a Cortex SC648 supercomputer drawing 1.2 kilowatts of electricity. The riders rode nonstop for 20 minutes to achieve the feat of the largest human-powered computation in history. Now, the idea for this event was to highlight the range of energy activities being conducted at MIT. You see, by attaching bicycles to electrical generators, the students were not only able to show that they could save energy to power this supercomputer, but they were also using the computer at the same time to conduct research promoting alternative energy. Several students on the MIT cycling team were involved in research into nuclear fusion, a potentially promising and safe alternative to the current fission powder. According to John Wright, a member of MIT's Plasma Science and Fusion Center, quote, by harnessing the energy creation processes of the sun, our research opens the possibility of limitless energy, but we still need to do our parts individually, such as by using energy-efficient computers in our research. Interesting idea. Now, you may know that the MIT cycling team is known, like a lot of MIT students, for their creativity. They've constructed aero bars, they've fabricated lightweight collapsible barriers to use at cyclocross practice, and they also have applied wind tunnel research to excel at team time trials. So congratulations, MIT students, on your human-powered computation world record. A couple of product recalls to tell you about, starting with some specialized helmets. These are the Model 2D specialized helmet. They were sold through retailers and online stores between July of this year and October. And they sold for about $200. So these are some fairly high-end helmets. The problem here is that these 3,000 helmets that are out there in the wild could pose a head injury hazard because the helmets have failed CPSC's required testing. The helmets are, again, the Model 2D. It says 2D printed on the sides of the helmet in the rear. They were sold for men and women in matte black, white, silver, blue, pink, and in team colors. Of course, stop using the helmet immediately. Contact your authorized specialized retailer. You will get a free replacement or a full refund. And I've put links in the show notes both to the Consumer Product Safety Commission website talking about the recall as well as to specialized website talking about the recall. Or you can call specialized toll-free at 877-808-8154 between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Mountain Time here in the United States. One more recall to tell you about, and this one is a voluntary recall by Shimano in Europe. So those of you who are in Europe, listen up. This is for Shimano's Pro, Shimano, and Saint cycling gloves. These were manufactured in Pakistan. And according to Shimano, these gloves could contain traces of a chemical known as benzidine. And apparently, benzidine has been linked to, well, potentially linked to bladder cancers and pancreatic cancers. Now, according to Shimano, they voluntarily decided to recall the Pro, Shimano, and Saint cycling gloves, which carry a label indicating that they were made in Pakistan, or which carry no label at all. Cycling gloves that carry a label indicating they were manufactured elsewhere are not affected by this recall. The label is located on the inside of the gloves. If you have a pair of gloves affected by the recall, or if you're unsure, you should stop using the gloves immediately and either visit a Shimano Pro dealer or visit Shimano's website in order to get details on how to obtain a refund. And I have put a link in the show notes to the website so you can go check it out for yourself. And I want to thank our friends over at Bike Biz Magazine for alerting us to this recall. Thanks, Carlton. Well, this last story I'm calling News of the Weird, and it's a story that I've been saving, and I should have brought it to you several weeks ago. You know that story already, but I just had to bring it to you. Now, if speaking of Carlton from Bike Biz, you know that he also has his website, quickrelease.tv, and a number of months ago, he had a video up there. It was quite crude, so those of you, maybe if you're listening with your kids, you might want to skip forward to the next portion of the show. But this video that Carlton had, it was a joke and it was a commercial, and it showed coming into a house, and there were some very interesting noises coming from upstairs. And the closer you got, you could tell that there was something amorous going on in a bedroom. And as you got to this bedroom and you looked in, there was a gentleman, shall we say, in flagrante delicto with his bicycle. It was really strange, okay? And so I thought, oh, that's just a joke. Now let me read you the story that I've been saving. A man has been placed on the sex offenders register after being caught trying to have sex with a bicycle. Robert Stewart was discovered in his room by two cleaners at the Aberley House Hostel in Ayr, southwest Scotland, in October last year. Mr. Stewart admitted to sexual breach of the peace in Sheriff's Court, where Deputy Fiscal Gail Davidson described how he had been found by the hostel workers. She said, quote, "They knocked on the door several times and there was no reply. They used a master key to unlock the door, and then they discovered the accused wearing only a white t-shirt, naked from the waist down. The accused was holding the bike and moving his hips back and forth as if to simulate sex. Both witnesses were extremely shocked, as I can imagine. Both witnesses who were extremely shocked notified the hotel manager, who in turn alerted the police. Mr. Stewart was placed on the sex offenders register, but his sentence was deferred until next month. He is not the first man. Okay, get this. He is not the first man to be convicted of a sexual offense involving an inanimate object, however. Carl Watkins, an electrician, was jailed for having sex with pavements in Redditch, Worcestershire, in 1993. Now, this comes from thetelegraph.co.uk. I have no idea how accurate the Telegraph is, but this, it has to be the strangest story related to bicycles that I have seen in over 2 years of doing the Fredcast. It just boggles the mind. And that is the end of the news for this week's edition of the Fredcast. Couple of announcements and news and notes that I just want to bring to you before we get into this week's features. First of all, about a month or so ago, many of you may have noticed that we had a little bit of an issue on the Fredcast.com website. Specifically, the problem that we were having was we ran out of bandwidth. Now, that's a good problem. That means that there are a lot of Fredcast listeners and a lot of people going to the website, a lot of people downloading the show. It just means that the show is growing. It's a great problem to have. Cost me a little bit more money every month because I had to up our bandwidth limit. But for those of you who are wondering what was going on, that's what it was. There's just a lot of Freds in the world, and they wanted to go to the Fredcast.com website. Item number two, you may be wondering what happened to the Sock Guy Fredcast sock design contest. Well, be patient for one more week because next week we will be announcing the winner and displaying it on our website. That could be a Christmas gift for one of you out there who's going to be winning some great swag courtesy of the Sock Guy. Item number three. Last week, I had a great lunch meeting with a gentleman by the name of Herman Hendricks. Now, you've heard Herman's name before and you've heard him on the show. Herman is the gentleman who is working with me on creating Fredcast tours. And as you may remember, our next Fredcast tour will be going from Salzburg, Austria to Venice, Italy, along some beautiful parts of Europe through the Dolomites and through some of the Giro d'Italia routes this June 24th through July 4th. Well, Herman had the opportunity to come out here. We had a great lunch at Deer Valley, watching the skiers come down the mountains. I don't know if we spent more time just enjoying each other's company or talking about the upcoming Fredcast tour. It was a great lunch. We planned what is going to be a great tour, and I will have more details for you very, very soon. In the meantime, if you're interested in getting on an interest list for the Fredcast Tour 2008, please send me an email to thefredcast@gmail.com, and I will put you on the list because spots are limited. We already have a couple of people that are interested. Make sure that you don't miss it. And by the way, if you have a spouse or significant other who would like to come along on the tour, Herman and I are working out some alternative routes that are shorter for some days where they may be a little bit more difficult for the non-cycling enthusiast. And of course, we'll find some great shopping and touring locations as well. So if you've got somebody that would like to come with you that would like to do some of the cycling, but not all, we're going to try to accommodate them as well. More details coming up, but mark those dates, June 24th through July 4th, for what will be a great cycling adventure from Salzburg, Austria to Venice, Italy. Look for more details shortly on the Fredcast. Well, at this time of the year, everyone's mailbox is full of greeting cards, Christmas cards, Hanukkah cards, Kwanzaa cards, you name it, New Year's cards, they're all out there. And listener Todd turned me on to a company that I should have known about, and I'm embarrassed to say that I didn't. The company is Skies Greets, and their tagline is greeting cards for the athletically minded. And well, many of you probably have already purchased your New Year's or your Christmas cards, and you've already sent them out. They have a wide variety of greeting cards, all of them with a cycling theme. As an example, there's a great New Year's card which takes the links of a bicycle chain and makes them look like fireworks. And on the front, of course, it says Happy New Year. And on the inside, the sentiment reads, Happy New Year. I hope it's great. Let's ride bikes and celebrate. Or how about the Halloween card where they've taken some bike parts to make it look like a spider. And on the outside, it says trick or treat. And on the inside, it says cleats on my feet. Give me some gel and a new carbon seat. They have cards for almost any occasion. Get well cards, thank you cards, Father's Day, Mother's Day, you name it, they have them. And I thought it was a really cool website. So Todd, thanks for turning me onto it. And now I've told the Fredcast listeners about it. And it's at skeese.com. That's SKEESE.com. And there are links in the show notes. Great greeting cards for all the cyclists out there. And thanks, Todd, for letting us know about it. Another website that I learned about from a listener, and this listener actually is the creator of the website. This is beachypeople.us, B-I-C-I, people.us. And for those of you who are familiar with things like MySpace and Facebook, and by the way, the Fredcast is now on Facebook. Go ahead and find us, and go ahead and I will accept you as a friend if you'd like to be one. But if you're familiar with social networking sites, BC People is a social networking site for cyclists. And according to the creator of the site, it was created as a place where cyclists can keep everything from their training diary to their calendars, racing calendars and training calendars, cycling-related files and videos, photo albums, friends and contacts, news feeds, everything that you would look for in a social networking site for cyclists. You can check it out at beachypeople.us. The site's only been up for about a week, and only a few friends have been invited to it, but now it should be available for you to join in and become part of the social network at bcpeople.us. Creator is hoping that it becomes a top destination for riders, coaches, and clubs, and a social networking site for cyclists. So go ahead and check it out. Let me know what you think of it. That's bcpeople.us. And while you're filling out your greeting cards for this time of the year and doing your social networking on BC People or on Facebook or whatever other social networking site you like, it's also the time of year when you need to start thinking about cross-training. That's right, it's cold outside. In some parts of the country, there's snow all over. It's snowing as I speak, by the way. We're expecting about a foot of snow tonight. And it's a little bit tough to get out on your bike this time of year. So it's time to start thinking about cross-training. And I don't know if you're familiar with Eldon, the so-called fat cyclist, but he has a great blog, and he's also writing for Bike Radar now. And I came across one of his most recent columns where he's talking about cross training. I'll just give you a little bit of it and then I'll point you to the website with a link in the show notes. But it says, as the days get shorter and oddly enough, nights get longer this time of year, we cyclists have a big dilemma. How do we stay sharp through the winter without burning out? The answer, simple, cross training. For those of you who aren't familiar with cross training, allow me to explain. Cross training is defined as performing an activity you really hate in the hope that it will make you better at an activity you really like, even though you're pretty sure you'd become better at the activity you like by simply doing that activity. And Eldon goes on to talk about some irreverent suggestions for track cyclists, for cyclocross, endurance racers, downhillers, pros, and then he tells you how not to cross train. He says, unfortunately, many cyclists choose absolutely horrible activities for their cross training, things like running, so that you'll likely enter next season with a sprained ankle and two blown knees. Swimming. Have you ever stopped to consider what's in the pool besides water? And weightlifting. Ugh. If you are into cross training and if you're into humor, go ahead and check out Eldon's article. I have put a link in the show notes, but his humor points out a reality that many of us are dealing with right now. And that is, how do we stay in shape in the off season? So that when the on-season comes around, we aren't in utter pain. I'd like to hear from you. Of course, I'm going to try to get some professional advice on this and try to get a cycling coach on the show to talk to us about what you really need to do to stay in shape this off-season. And of course, we've talked to people about this in the past, and we've talked about DVDs and things like that that can help you in the off-season. But I want to know what it is that you do. What do you find to be most useful? go to the website, check out all the ways to contact me, and whether you want to send it to me in an email or, what would be preferred, send me a voicemail or a recorded comment that I can play on the show, just answer this question. What do you do to stay in shape for cycling at this time of the year? I'm curious to hear what you have to say. And while we're sitting on those trainers at the gym and lifting weights or just sitting around watching football, a lot of us are reminiscing about what a great year it was for our own cycling. And one of the great events every year is an event called El Tour de Tucson. And I've talked about it here on the show before and told you about why I think it's a great event and why, while I haven't done it, how much I really would like to do it. Well, got a couple of emails from some people who said that they saw a video online that somebody took at this year's El Tour de Tucson, and that the video mentioned the Fredcast. So I went out, sought out the video, and sure enough, the Fredcast is mentioned. Give a listen.
I'm recording this, so I'm going to send this off to the Fredcast.
It's all good.
You ever listen to the Fredcast?
No, I can't say I do. I listen to a lot of different casts.
It's go to thefredcast.com. It's all about cycling. So.
Good stuff.
This is one of the events he promoted on there, so give a listen sometime.
That's a 75-mile stop.
So how awesome is that? You guys are actually out there promoting the show. And this was at the 75-mile rest stop, so even with the oxygen deprivation, you've got the presence of mind to talk about the Fredcast. I appreciate that. Well, buried also in my email was an email from the individual who did that video, and he also had for us an audio review of El Tour de Tucson. So give a listen. Here is a Fredcast listener telling you about his experience this year at El Tour de Tucson.
Hi, my name is Saul, and I'm a Fred. On an earlier episode of the Fredcast, David mentioned the 25th edition of El Tour de Tucson. I've ridden this ride every year for the past 5 years, and this year I decided that I would try to bring this event to my fellow Fredcast listeners. I've also sent David a link to the short video blog I shot while out on the course. El Tour is the largest perimeter cycling event in the country and is coordinated by the Perimeter Bicycling Association of America. El Tour is a charity fundraising event with all proceeds going to support Tunedito Children and Family Services. This year was expected to be the largest El Tour yet, with over 7,000 riders registered a week prior to the event. While El Tour's silver anniversary in itself was a significant milestone for this ride, this year was also special in that it was designated by the League of American Cyclists as a national bike rally. On November 17th, riders were greeted to a relatively warm 51-degree morning, with the daytime temperature peaking at 80 degrees. It was a perfect day in November to ride your bike. But even with those temperatures, I was glad I lathered myself with sunscreen throughout the day, as the desert sun can still give you a bad sunburn, even in our mild winters. El Tour de Tucson comes in four sizes: 35 miles, 66 miles, 81 miles, and 109 miles. The 109-mile event draws the largest rider turnout, with over 4,000 riders lining up for the 7 a.m. start. The event officials divide the starting area into four sections based on when a rider is expected to finish: platinum, gold, silver, and bronze. Bronze riders expect to complete the 109-mile journey in more than 9 hours, silver from 6 to 9 hours, and gold expect to complete their trip around town from 5 to 6 hours. Platinum riders are the elite riders of El Tour and really know how to push the pace, hence the reason they start at the front of the tour. To earn a pass in the platinum section, you must pre-qualify by completing a previous PBAA event, such as El Tour, the Tour of the Tucson Mountains, El Tour de Phoenix, or the Cochise County Cycling Classic, with a platinum time. Other qualifications include participants in the Tour de France, a professional rider in good standing, or a Cat 1 or Cat 2 rider with a valid USA cycling license. Riders who aren't fortunate enough to have a platinum pass start lining up at the front of the gold section as early as 4:30 a.m. Man, that's early. El Tour is not only a road race, it's an adventure race. after only 8 miles into the ride, everyone must dismount and walk across the Santa Cruz River. The river crossings are an El Tour tradition dating back all the way to the very first event. We were greeted by friendly volunteers, a very cold chihuahua, and a group of mariachis. This part of the tour has always been my favorite. It's hard to describe being part of the hundreds of cyclists carrying their extremely expensive bikes across a dry riverbed, as if it were a cyclocross event. My shoes tend to end up with plenty of sand in them by the time I cross to the other side. And on a personal note, this part of the ride is very sentimental as it passes by my childhood home. Almost halfway through the course, riders will discover the Sabino Creek crossing. This part of the course traverses through private property, but luckily the owner is none other than the director of the El Tour itself. Many riders actually try to ride through most of the soft sand here, but I wouldn't try it. Some years, there's actually water running through the creek, but this year was just another dry year. Snyder Hill is a section of the route every rider remembers because of the short but intense climb out of the creek crossing. This hill is a short 3/4 mile, but the last 50 feet or so are extremely steep. There are many other climbs in El Tour, ranging from a couple like Snyder Hill to a long grind fest to the top of Rancho Vistoso. The highest point in El Tour is nearly 3,300 feet. The total elevation gain I registered on my Polar Bike computer was 2,900 feet. One of the other unique aspects of El Tour is the bike patrol. El Tour gets 100 or so volunteers to ride the course, untimed to help out cyclists who require medical or mechanical assistance. This year, I decided to volunteer for bike patrol. Along the way, I met people from all over the country. Earlier in the day, I talked to a rider who was a recent participant in the RAM, the Race Across America. He told me about the 80 stitches he received after he ran into his own support vehicle near the start of the race, and he still went on to finish. When he had to take out all of his stitches, he was saying that the nurse actually had to take a break in between the removal of all of his stitches. It took more than 2 hours to take out all the stitches. I also ran into a couple of tandem riders who were on their fifth flat by the time I was able to stop and help them. I ran into them again later in the day and learned that they had 2 more flats on the same tire. I helped them to figure out that their rim tape was actually rolling up, causing pinch flats from underneath the tube. A little cardboard from the box containing one of my spare tubes was a perfect fit for their rim, and a great substitute rim tape for the time being. It helped get them to the finish line. And further along the route, I also ran into a couple of ladies who had a flat and didn't know how to change their flat. Lucky for them, I was passing by and stopped to change their flat for them. Each aid station along the El Tour route is well staffed with enthusiastic volunteers, helping to get you the food and water you need. On the menu was bananas, oranges, cookies, and PB&Js. Once you get to the finish line, you're greeted by a huge post-ride party. Throughout the day, the organizers hand out the various awards. This year's overall first place finisher was Carlos Hernandez from Hermosillo, Arizona. He finished El Tour in a record time of 4 hours, 10 minutes, and 51 seconds, covering the 109 miles, river crossings and all, at a blistering average pace of 26.1 miles per hour. There is also a prize for the last place finisher. As with the Tour de France, this prize is also highly coveted, as it means that the rider has been out on the course for nearly a full 11 hours. This year's last place rider was Michael Garcia from Keller, Texas. Well, I hope you enjoyed my overview of El Tour de Tucson 2007. It was a great time, and I had fun being on the bike patrol and meeting so many different people. For more information on signing up for next year's ride, be sure to visit www.pbaa.com and sign up for next year's El Tour, and maybe I'll see you out there on the route.
Saul, thanks for that great review of El Tour de Tucson. It really makes you want to go out there and do it. I'm just not sure I can do 109 miles with an average speed of 26 miles per hour, including walking through those river crossings. That sounds tough. Well, there are links in the show notes to the PBAA website, as well as to Saul's great video of his ride at this year's 2007 El Tour de Tucson. And remember, if you're out there doing a ride or a race and you'd like to cover it, feel free to send me an audio tape, an audio comment, a voicemail, whatever you'd like, we'd be happy to put it here on the Fredcast. Thanks again, Saul. Great review. So you remember earlier when I said that one of you listeners accused me of being a so-called techno-weenie? Well, listener Mark must also be a techno-weenie just like me because he sent me a link to a new website for a new cycle computer called the Cerevelum. And of course, I put a link in the show notes, but let me just tell you a little bit about it. It appears to be a very new product and one that isn't quite finished yet. But essentially, the Cerevelum is supposed to integrate all cycling computer functions into one expandable unit. There is a head unit that goes on your handlebars, and that's got your typical cycle computer functions. But you can also add in add-on modules with things like GPS, power, heart rate. Oh, and by the way, did I mention the rear view camera? As listener Mark said, you too can emulate one of those huge road-hogging RVs right there on your bicycle. Go ahead and check it out at cerevelum.com. It's an interesting idea with all these modules that they're offering, and I'm curious to see how it's going to work and how it will be received. And of course, if I can get a unit to test to let you know about it, I will do so. But in the meantime, go ahead and check out their website. It's at cerevelum.com. That's CEREVELUM.com. Go ahead and check it out. Well, it's been a while since we've had a Fredcast, so excuse me that the show is going quite so long. But before we go, I just wanted to mention one upcoming event, and that is the UCI Track Cycling World Cup being held January 18th through the 20th. At the 100,000 square foot, $15 million ADT event center down in Carson, California. We've talked about this year after year, and every year I get a voicemail or an email or two from those of you who didn't know about the event, who weren't really familiar with track cycling, and went out and had a blast for an entire weekend watching these amazing athletes. Go ahead and check it out. You can get tickets from Ticketmaster. You can get information at lavelodrome.org. And I've also put links into the show notes. That's UCI Track Cycling World Cup in Carson, California. That's in Southern California, just south of downtown LA, January 18th through the 20th. If you go and you want to send pictures or an audio review, please let me know. I'd be happy to put it here on the show. And something else that we've covered here on the show and something that you're hearing in the background, this is the Nutcracker Suite as performed by the geniuses at Specialized Bicycle. This is their rendition of the famous Tchaikovsky piece played only on bicycle parts. And there's some great animation that goes along with it. It's Specialized holiday card to you and to the cycling community. And it's a great way to close out this week's show with this great music. I put a link in the show notes to where you can find it online. So go ahead and listen to the rest. I'll be back in a sec. And with that, we will close out this week's show, but a couple of notes before we go. First of all, if you'd like to contact me, give me any feedback, there are a number of ways to do so. Of course, there's always the email, which is thefredcast@gmail.com. I also list all the ways to contact me at the website, www.thefredcast.com, and there you will find our voicemail hotline, 206-203-FRED, my Skype line, 435-258-6373, that's 435-258-6-FRED. I've also got two additional ways, just using your computer, that you can send me a voice message. There's MyChingo and TringMe. You can also find the TringMe application on my Facebook profile. Go to Facebook and just search for me, and go ahead and add me as a friend, and you'll be able to click the link and send me a voicemail right from Facebook. Of course, one thing we'd love for you to do is spread the word about the Fredcast. Tell your friends, tell your cycling buddies, your club, your team, the people you ride with, the people that you just meet, helping them change a tire. Let them know about the Fredcast. Of course, you can vote for us at Podcast Alley. There is a link on the left-hand side of thefredcast.com to scroll down just a little bit, or go to iTunes and write a review. Any of those would be greatly appreciated. And of course, remember, I'm also looking for your feedback on what it is you do to cross-train during the winter. And finally, it's time, as it is every time we do the Fredcast, it's time for our PodSafe cycling music. And of course, it's the holidays. So this week's music is holiday related. And I've got two, count them, two holiday songs for you. The first, well, this one simply because I've been away for a while. And you know, the holidays just sort of snuck up on me. And so the first is a song by Jenny Juzel and Tightwad. It's called When Christmas Sneaks Up on You. And the second by our old friend Jimmy Bratcher. Jimmy does the opening music for the Fredcast, and this is his version of Carol of the Bells. So now, before we go into the music, I just want to thank you for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed. For those of you out there who do celebrate Christmas, I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. I will have a show out for you during Christmas week, but I wanted to be sure to let you know how much I appreciate you. You are my Christmas and Hanukkah present every single year. Thank you for being there. Thank you for listening. So until next week, when I will be back with another episode of the Fredcast, enjoy this Christmas PodSafe cycling music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
They full of cookies and some eggnog too. What in the world is coming over you? I'll tell you. I'll give you a clue. You just can't help it when Christmas sneaks up on you. Rudolph on the flat TV. Stack presents underneath the tree. Snow is falling all across the state. The 25th is just a week away. Well, I tell ya, I'll give you a clue. You just can't help it when Christmas sneaks up on you. Family, you can't avoid it. Just enjoy it when Christmas sneaks up on you. You got Santa and his ho, ho, ho. Silver bells on the stereo. Plate full of cookies and some eggnog too. What in the world is coming over you? Well, I tell you.
Bell cramp. Carol the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw care away. Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, weak and bold. One seemed to hear words of the cheer from everywhere, filling the air. Oh, how they pound, raising the sound. Oh, Unendale, telling a tale, merrily ringing, while people singing songs of cheer. Christmas is here. Merry, merry, merry Christmas. Merry, merry, merry Christmas.
Seems to hear words of God.